This time let me invite you to turn to the preacher's book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 will begin at verse 1 and go as far as verse 11. Hear now the word of God. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all his work, which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again. Blowing toward the south and turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along. And on its circular courses, the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea. Yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. And so there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see this? It is new. Already it has existed for ages, which were before us. There's no remembrance of earlier things, and also of the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. This entering of God's holy and infallible word, and may He bless it to us this day. Well, we're going to be giving our attention to verse 2. Verse 2. And the reason is because this verse really provides a great theme in this book. The word vanity is a word frequently used in Ecclesiastes. In fact, the book is probably most known for this particular statement, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Out of the 71 times that this word is found in the Old Testament, 38 of them are found here in this book. Now, there have been some wrong translations that have led to much confusion. And many interpreters have misunderstood the significance of this word vanity and this phrase vanity of vanities. They think that the message of the book is that life without God is meaningless, and the only one who turns to God in faith is the one who has life. Therefore, the book is essentially seen as an evangelistic tract trying to convince the unbeliever to turn to God so that meaning is found for life. We've also said some others in their misunderstanding have thought that there's a pessimistic teacher and then an optimistic editor who comes along and adds things to kind of balance the book out from its pessimism. There's too much of a pessimistic tone in the book. The message of this book is not life is meaningless. And the phrase vanity of vanities, all is vanity, does not mean all is meaningless. And so I just want to focus on one thing today, just one thought, one idea, and that is this. What does this word vanity mean? How does our understanding of this phrase help us to interpret the entire book? I have three points for us to consider. The first one is this, the meaning of Havelim, which is vanity of vanities. Secondly, the message, this life is Havel, it is short. And thirdly, the message, this life is Havel, it is elusive, life is elusive. I will tell you there's a third point in this book, and it's introduced by the question that's asked in verse 3, and then the preceding verses found after that in verses 4 through 11, which is this: life is redundant. It is repetitive and redundant. And so really that takes up the whole theme. Life is short. Life is elusive. Life is repetitive. It is redundant. But today we'll just give our focus, our attention to the first two ideas, because they tie with the idea of vanity. So first, the meaning of Havel Havelim. What does this mean? You should know that this is really an important theme, because not only does it open the book, it also ends the book. So in chapter 1, verse 2, and in chapter 12, verse 8, you can see them as two bookends, but this is the same phrase. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And this is one of the primary themes in Solomon's book. Because I said it shows up 38 times, it shows up on average about every five verses. Now, vanity is not a word that's used commonly today, and therefore it does not communicate much to you, the modern reader and hearer. When I was growing up, a vanity was a dresser with a large mirror, and it's where, women put their makeup on. So what does vanity of vanities mean? Is this like the most beautiful dresser of all makeup dressers? No. No. The Hebrew word here is Havel. Havel. Which has been unfortunately translated as meaningless or sometimes pointless. This is not the preacher's perspective. In fact, he will speak of some things later on in the book as being better than other things. And if I say that, well, this is better than that, that places a degree of value and meaning on things of this world. It cannot mean everything is meaningless if I've actually created a value system of things in this world. Now, you should understand that Havel has a literal meaning and it has a figurative meaning. Literally, Havel means breath, wind, a vapor. Think about the word Havel, Havel. Like it's a sigh, Havel. It's a heavy sigh. It sounds like the word heavy. By the way, that's an onomatopoeic word. It means a word that it sounds the way it's said. It's heavy. Hevel. That's what it means literally. And the concept of this breath, this wind, this vapor is common in the Bible. We've already sung Psalm 39, verses 5 and 6. Behold, you've made my days as handbreadths, and my lifetime is nothing in your sight. Surely every man at his best is a mere breath. Surely every man walks about as a phantom, as a ghost. Every man walks about as a ghost. Surely they make an uproar in vain. Or in Psalm 144, O Lord, what is man that you regard him? The son of man that you think of him? Man is like a breath. His days are like a passing shadow. And yet here, when Solomon speaks of all things being Hevel, he's not speaking literally, as if this life were literally a vapor, but he's speaking figuratively, representing that which is passing, short-lived, momentary. This life is not necessarily futile, although there are futile things in it, but this life is fleeting. And that's what the preacher means. H.C. Leupold takes the position that vanity of vanities could easily be translated utterly transitory. All is transitory. Or Ian Provan, the merest of breaths, the merest of breaths, everything is a breath. Or maybe one of my favorites, one points out that one of their college professors, Fred Brock, used to say, soap bubbles, all is soap bubbles. The bubbles are delightfully beautiful, multicolored, shimmering globes dancing in the air, gracefully changing their form until poof! They disappear in a brief, shiny cascade of tiny droplets. Beautiful, but insubstantial. Delightful, but only here for a moment. Just like life. You ever try that? Grab one of those soap bubbles, and it's on your hand, and oh, you're just trying to so carefully hold it. It's so delicate and fragile, and then it's gone. That's life. A sunset may be radiant, as if one painted the sky. It takes your breath away. It causes you to pull off to the side of the road, maybe take your phone out and take a picture of it. But it is hevel. It is fleeting. Nothing can be held on to. Even the picture that you take from the camera cannot retain the experience you had. In Ecclesiastes, many things are declared to be hevel. Pleasure is hevel, and work is hevel. Wisdom is hevel, laboring night and day, wealth, possessions, and honor, a wandering appetite, the days of a man's life, your youth and your vigor. All of this is hevel. Everything is hevel. But that doesn't mean meaningless. Because of this, it makes sense for the preacher, for Kohelet. Remember, that's his title, the preacher, Kohelet. It makes sense for Kohelet to advise the young people in chapter 11 to rejoice in their youth while living before the face of God, only then to turn around and say, remove grief and anger from your heart, because youth and energy are hevel, not meaningless, but rather there is a brevity to youth, and all that comes later in your life is hevel. So hevel is not meaningless or pointless, and yet there is another aspect to the word. Not only is it fleeting or short-lived, but there is a frustration in hevel, in the sense that this world is subjected to a fleeting and passing nature. While it was made and designed to have a permanence, yet in our rebellion, it lost that permanence. We saw this in Romans chapter 8. The creation was subjected to hevel. Not willingly. The creation didn't sin. It was our sin that brought this upon the creation. But it was subjected to hevel because of Him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. This world seems unable to fulfill its purpose under man's curse. There is a universal groaning and suffering because it is incapable of reaching its potential. You remember that man was to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Bring it to fullness. And that is not happening. Rather, the world is like a woman who's been in labor for 20 hours, for 30 hours, unable to bring forth the child. Hevel does not only mean that life is fleeting. Hevel also means that life is frustrating, challenging, perplexing. And so the rest of the book of Ecclesiastes is going to explain and illustrate the hevel of this life. But here are two ways to begin to think about it this morning. The first one, and this is our second point, it deals with the message of Ecclesiastes, which is this: life is short. Life is short. We recently celebrated a birthday in our house, and often when you celebrate birthdays, there's usually candles around. And you know what happens when you blow out a candle? It goes up in smoke. And how long does that smoke last? That smoke is hevel. It is brief. It is momentary. You can see it. You can smell it. But it vanishes quicker than your birthday, which is also temporary, right? By the end of the evening of your birthday, what are you thinking about? Your next birthday. There's the fleeting aspect of life, even for kids. It's really hard to communicate this fleeting aspect of life to children, because for them, life kind of drags on. The days are long. The evenings are long. The bedtimes are long. And it's hard to really get a grasp of what's being talked about here, but maybe we can communicate it in this way. And I have some illustrations to use this morning. But you know what it is. You get all excited, your birthday comes, and before you know it, it's gone. It was here in a moment. It was this great and grand day you were looking forward to. But I know you kids. There's another day that comes that's really exciting to you too. It's the Lord's Day. It comes. It's exciting. Here it is. All these things you get to do. You get to see your friends. You get to worship God. You get to have fellowship meal together. What's going to be put out on the table? And then it's gone. Monday comes. Life is hevel. It's short. Go back to that smoke for a minute. That candle smoke that's rising and dancing in the sky for a moment, it makes no permanent impact on the world, let alone the candle itself making an impact on the world. We don't even remember what color the candle was. But worse, most birthdays leave no lasting impression on the world. Life is short. You have some birthdays. And then you die. This is the way we talk about other things in this life too. For example, think of beauty. Proverbs 31:30, charm is deceitful and beauty is hevel. It is fleeting. I can't remember what actress said it, but she said, aging is like being born rich and dying poor. Okay, well, that's the world's perspective. James communicates the same idea of this fleeting life in his letter. In chapter 4, verse 13, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that." And so, Ecclesiastes is a meditation on what it means for our lives to be short. What it means for our lives to be like, here's another picture in a birthday, like a birthday balloon filled with helium. You go outside and on accident you lose your grip and it's gone. And you just stand there watching it until you can't see it anymore. You think you see it over here, then you kind of catch it, and it's gone. That's life. It's short-lived. Your possession of life is short-lived, just like that balloon, here then gone. Now, this is not morbid. This is not depressing. in one sense. I mean, there's something about it that is related to sin, but there's also something that is simply honest about the reality that we live in. We do not live long in this world. Have you come to terms with that? Do you think about that? Or do you give yourself to all kinds of distractions to try and pretend like this isn't the case? Well, thirdly, not only is life short, but life is elusive. Life is elusive. It's transient. It's hard to take hold of. You remember it said earlier that man's like a phantom. Can a ghost, you know, can a spirit grab onto a chair? No. It is elusive. Let's go back to the blown out candle and the dancing smoke. Have you ever, so you've looked at the smoke, you've smelled the smoke, but have you ever tried to grab the smoke? Capture the smoke? In fact, as you reach your hand out, the air on your hand actually pushes the smoke further away. You can't grab onto it. The smoke is elusive. That's what it means. It's hard. You can't grab onto it. And so is life elusive. Ecclesiastes is a meditation on how life can be like, how life can be like grabbing that smoke. Or, if you will, think about the helium-filled balloon again. You let it go in the house and it bounces up and it hits the ceiling like it's trying to push its way through the ceiling toward an adventure into the sky. And you leave it and you come back later, you want to play with your balloon and where it's just lying there in the dust, blowing with the wind. It's elusive. You grab onto the string and it just kind of hangs instead of floating. Why won't this thing float? You hit it up in the sky, it just comes right back down. You can't control or manipulate this life. Why don't helium balloons last? Why do buildings and cars and health deteriorate? Why does it rain right after you wash your car? Why does it rain the one day you forget your umbrella? Why do you injure yourself when you're exercising? Why do you wake up more tired than before you slept? Why is that line over there that I did not get into in the grocery line, why is that one going faster than this one? And why is it when I switch over there, this one goes faster? Life is elusive. You can't control these things. Why do loved ones grow ill while the selfish seem to thrive? The Psalms speak of this as well. As for man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower in the field, for the wind passes over it and it's gone, and its place knows it no more. We're in that time of year where all the dandelions will begin to come up and they'll immediately turn into that white, I don't know, puffy thing. And kids like to grab them and blow them. And you say, don't do that. We don't want dandelions in our yard. But you see, if you just let it there, it's like it grew up and the wind comes and it's gone. It's not able to hold on to the ground. It's not able to stay there the flower looks up at the tree and it says, I'm envious of you. How come you're able to stay there the whole time? And I'm quickly blown away every season. Life is elusive. And you hear this psalm. Man flourishes like a flower in the field. We flourish like a flower in the field? Certainly, our activity must make a larger impact in the world than a flower in the field. But this life is hard to pin down. It's hard to get a hold of. It's hard to control and manipulate. It's hard to bring the desires of your heart into fruition, into manifestation, day by day. The day gets away from you. Doesn't just the day itself get away from you? It's so elusive. And you've been led to believe that your life can make a difference, that it can have an impact on others. But that must be balanced with the reality that life is hevel. Or as Kohelet often says, life is like chasing after the wind. You ever chase after the wind? Can you grab it? Can you put it in your pocket? Can you follow it? As soon as you're running, it like moves. And you can't grab life or control it either. One pastor says it this way. We imagine that we'll live forever, or at the very least that someone else will get cancer and not us. We think our lives are built with granite, not sand. We pretend we're in control. We imagine that we can make a difference in the world and accomplish things of lasting significance. After all, that's why we go to work each day. It's also why we have a midlife crisis when we look back and see who we are and what we've done, and that it doesn't seem to amount to very much. One theologian says it this way. Again, human activity is not meaningless. But this book emphasizes whether we achieve the goals set before us. Human activity is not meaningless. But we must emphasize whether we achieve the goals set before us. And our goals, your goals, ought to line up with reality, not in defiance of it. You need to have a realistic perspective that life is elusive. That doesn't mean you can't accomplish things, and it doesn't mean you can't influence others. But how often we will exaggerate that in our hearts and minds. How often the potential is ever before us and never able to be grabbed onto. The nature of reality is such that you cannot manipulate it. Your thoughts and your actions cannot bring you the control that you desire over this life. Now that could push us into a state of great worry on the one hand, great anxiety. It could also push us into a state of apathy or carelessness. Life's short and elusive. Some people think that's actually what this book is about. It's not. See, how does the Christian line up with the nature of reality in a way that pleases God and is true to His world? That is the question we must pursue. Christ's own teaching seems relevant here. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus warns His audience against storing up temporal earthly treasures. He says to them, listen, don't be caught up in the worry of this life. And don't store up for yourself temporal earthly treasures, but instead seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and your necessities will be added to you. Now, Jesus was clear that we are to respond to the nature of reality not by clinging to this life, rather by giving our lives away. Not using our life for personal advantage, but rather using them for the glory of God and for the good of others. This is the Apostle Paul as well. If I could sum up my whole life in one thing, It is this: for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Christ is life to me. He is the center and focus of my life. He is the trust of my life. He is the guide of my life. I am to imitate Him in this life. And when I have died, there is my gain. What is your life? And what is your gain? You can see how this meditation on life being short and elusive leads us right to the very question that is asked next in verse 3. What advantage, what gain does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? That's what Paul is talking about. For me to live is Christ and die is gain. We don't have time to get into verse 3 today. And we're going there. But let me just bring us again to a conclusion. We had one purpose this morning. We want to understand what vanity of vanities, all is vanity, means. It means that we each live under the sun. We live on this side of eternity, and therefore life on this side of eternity is a vapor. It is a wind. It is smoke. And then we die. And our children do the same thing. And generation after generation, the generations follow after the same pattern. And it will until Christ returns. Being a Christian does not ignore this reality. Being a Christian does not sugarcoat this reality. Rather, being a Christian helps us to stop ignoring this reality and to live the brevity and the momentary life that we have well. To live glorifying God and enjoying Him only but for a moment now, but for eternity in the world to come. And it's because of that that we need to have an eternal perspective even in this momentary life. We need to have a forever perspective in this momentary life. Now, we're going to talk about that more, especially when we get into chapter 3. It talks about how God has put eternity into their hearts. What does that mean? We'll talk about that. These first verses lay the foundation for the main argument of this book, that only preparing to die and coming to terms with death in light of who God is and what He's done in response to death, this will teach us how to live. In preparing to die, we will learn how to live in this momentary life. I supplied for you a number of questions this morning as an insert. And I encourage you to take the time to work through those questions by yourselves or with others. Give your time, give your attention to the Lord and to this book this day. Redeem the time. You don't have much of it. Amen.